Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Index Podcast, where the three of us come together every couple of weeks to discuss on-chain data, chart crimes, and metrics that move the crypto industry. Today is Thursday, the 4th of April, and we are Denning, on-chain Corgi at Flashbots.
Hi.
Hildobi, resident data house at Dragonfly.
Hello, everyone.
And I am Boxer, community power horse at Dune. Before we get into it, nothing we say here should be relied upon as legal, financial, investment, tax, or even life advice. The views expressed in the podcast are not representative of those of our employers, and we are acting independently of our respective professional roles. And with that, last podcast we talked about blobs, and a lot has happened in the blobs on Ethereum mainnet. So Hildobi's gonna give us an update on what is happening there currently.
So let's look into blobs.
Yeah, blobs have changed quite a bit. Last time we looked at it, they were still like at a third of the target, which is the current target is 3 blobs per block and the limit at 6. So whenever we reach 3, you know, like the EIP 1559 market dynamics start kicking in. And that's when it really gets interesting and you see who, you know, is happy to pay those fees and who was just here for like free like transaction spam. And so here we're looking at my blobs dashboard, and we can see that about a week ago on March 27th, inscriptions started to come around and be quite prominent in terms of blog posting, and even posted over 50% quite a few days in a row of all blobs being posted. And this actually triggered Blobspace to reach its target, and even for a bit it extended it. So that's why if we look at like blobs target, it's been fairly close to target, and we've seen also the blob base fee basically rise on the same like day that inscriptions came around. And interestingly, actually today, a few hours ago, we've seen that inscriptions have started to, slow down in activity for reasons that I'm not too sure. And this means that the blob fee has returned to its $0 like original price, I guess. And you know, we've seen also other chains, but I think this has been like an interesting thing is like if you look at this top chart, what you can see is every L2 is posting blobs based on how much activity it has at this time. And you'll see, for example, Linear has variable amounts of blobs over time, and Inscriptions has been taking like the remaining amounts of blob space without necessarily, you can't really go further than this. And therefore, that's been the case up until a few hours ago when they stopped posting blobs. And also, interestingly, Linear has been increasing in terms of blob posting, which is another topic. So since last time, the new chains that have started to post blobs are mostly Linear. And there's another one, but I'll talk about this one later. What happened with Linear is they started to post, and actually they caught my eye being like one of the biggest posters. If we look like in the past 4 hours, they posted 37% of blobs, which is extremely high. Base is behind 24%, and then it brings back down to 11% for Arbitrum, 10 for Optimism and stuff like this. So it's very, very high in terms of amount of blobs. So there must be a lot of activity on there, which I think we can dive into afterwards. And another thing that has been interesting is that I think compared to posting in call data, where you kind of need to know which addresses are posting for each L2, now you can really see who is posting on blobs. Because if someone is posting on blobs and you don't know it, you know, there's something going on. And so far, it's been either inscriptions or other L2s. And there's been, for example, a new L2 that I didn't even know, which uses the OP stack that has been posting like one blob every 2 hours and has just launched, which is called Metal. And I wouldn't have been aware of it if it weren't for seeing it pop up on blobs and like posting very regularly, which is very L2-like and not very inscription kind of style of posting, if that makes sense. So yeah, it kind of like is a good proxy to see what new chains are popping up and using blobs, which wasn't really possible in the old like cold data system. But in terms of chains activity, I think the more notable ones, of course, like I said, are Linea and Base, which I think we're going to dive into in this podcast and see like why are these popping up, what is going on. But before then, there's a bit more on blobs, and I think it's good to look back into, okay, now that we have blobs, like what has it achieved? Is it actually a lot cheaper than it used to be with cold data? And we have this like tweet from Rob who looked into it and compared to what it would have cost to post the same amount of data on cold data. And there's roughly like a 80 to 90% reduction going from like 50 million to 1.9 million of dollars, which is, so I'd call that quite a success. And, you know, it's reflected in fees on across L2s. So it's super nice to see that even now that the, you know, the market that has the blob space market has kicked in for a bit, everything has been going fine and like there's no, not much of a hiccup. So that's always a good sign. And then there's also, we've seen also Base, the transaction fee on Base has risen like considerably recently due to its activity it's been seeing. And as a response, the Base team has been increasing the amount of the gas limit. I think originally from 2.5, and they did it gradually. They wanted to increase it 100%, and that was done by going for 2.5 to 3.75, making sure that everything is running fine, and then increasing another time to 5 million gas per second. And it has resulted in fees basically now being extremely low back again for Base. So, you know, all a positive sign. It'll be interesting to see like how, what is the strategy going forward? Is that going to be like their go-to to constantly increase the gas limit? The problem is that, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, isn't that like you're just turning up the volume without like having better hardware or anything? Like that's going to make it harder to decentralize it down the line, right? This is basically the Solana approach where like, like in the future, like if Base ever wants to decentralize or like have a decentralized validator, you said you'll have like a bunch of data centers. Because that's what you're doing if you're increasing the gas limit per block. It's like the nodes will have to process more transactions. So they'll have to have more compute power, more memory. In the end, more storage as well. Storage is not really constrained, but yeah, it's still something you should think about.
Yeah, I don't think it's like the only best solution, and there's probably much better ones, but it's like an easy like fix, I guess, you know, for like for the short term, it works and it's not increasing by crazy amounts. Of course, like I hope they don't go for that route where they're constantly increasing that like gas limit. Otherwise, that means if you want to run a sequencer, it's basically you're very limited in terms of, you know, you need really good hardware to make sure it's following and it's always at the head of the chain and stuff like this, because you got to process a lot more data.
Yeah, it's also the DVM kind of falls apart after a while. We saw this with BNB, where I don't think anyone can really join the node network anymore because it's like really hard to get it to sync at all. Or at least this was like, I don't know, word on the street a year or two ago. I don't know what BNB is doing nowadays. But it's basically like, yeah, the EVM is not really designed to have this high of a gas limit, and just cranking everything up to 100 and then just sending it is not really a sustainable approach. I have no educated opinion on what the Base guys are doing here. And since they're only running on essentially one validator, it should be fine for now. But in the future, if they want to decentralize, I think, yeah, we'll see how those decisions have panned out.
I'm also curious, like, speaking of BNB, they have OPBNB, which is also like a fork of OP chains, but like tuned up to 11, and I'm curious how that's doing, just in terms of usage, but also like, is it actually, isn't it having like a ton of reorgs, or is it like having any trouble running at all? Because, you know, they've tweaked it to quite high levels that I guess wouldn't be recommended in general. But, you know, it, for the user, it's great. For the devs, it's probably not the best experience.
And that, I feel, I mean, like no. When price keep being like so high, that's when the narratives of L3 and other DA solution comes in, right? Like, so now you don't want to store those data really on Ethereum or even on the sidechain L2 blobs. Then you seek some other cheaper solution maybe. It was really funny. One of the tweet comment was like, people really paying $600 to store 256 KB for 18 days right now. It's like, that's like the peak of the blob fee, I guess. And I guess like we hope the economics will regulate the usage of the blob. But yeah, as you guys said, there is a cap there.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's like interesting to monitor how this goes, and hopefully they do it reasonably. But yeah, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Also, like, I think this whole blob inscription, how's it, inscription coming to Ethereum, just ridiculous to me. It's like, Ethereum has a functionality of like having token and then all the contracts for sale and all that. Like, inscription started with a chain without EVM, you know, features. And now you're basically like, you're able to do that, but you want to do it in an inscription way and trying to like make a ledger of like how much token you might have bought and like you hold, etc. It's like, I'm a like vision, like a, how to say, a person with full vision, but I'm like covering my eyes and walk on the streets with a white can. Like, I just like to do that. Like, for what? Gord had a funny too. He was saying Ethereum is World War III resistant, but not blob description resistant. That's like a funny comment. Yeah.
I think like the inscriptions kind of had three phases where they're like, oh, there's a new place to post inscriptions. We might as well do inscriptions because I guess that's what inscriptors do. So sure. Then they did it, and then they realized, oh, fuck, we're posting a little too much, so price to post them is, like, a little high, and it's actually higher than posting them just in cold data. So they started to slow down, regulate themselves, and now, as of 24 hours ago, they stopped posting. Well, I mean, they decreased posting to a point where we're no longer at target, so I guess maybe it was just a fad that died down. We'll see.
Kind of like it's blockchain graffiti.
Yeah.
There's just a bunch of kids running around the different blockchains, just tagging up the block space. And they seem to have left town. We're in luck. Maybe there's a festival three towns over. Like, I don't know. It is really strange.
Yeah. Like, no L2 is going to stop posting blobs because they actually genuinely need it. So, you know, it's, they essentially decide what the price of blobs are, as long as we haven't reached like max of like L2s posting on blobs. But that's probably not for now. And I don't even think once every L2 is posting blobs, we probably still are not a target. I think we're missing like Blast, Mental, stuff like this, which has high activity. So those would be, I assume, like, posting significant amount of blobs.
I was going to ask about that. So you have identified all the blob posters, which are like outside of blobscriptions. I mean, there must be many accounts that are posting those. But all the chains that you showed earlier on your dashboards, or that people can look at on your dashboards, those are the chains which are currently posting. So Metis is missing, for example. Like, I think that's a big one. Or like Boba Network, I don't know if they're around still, but like, what do you think? Like, is it just like their devs haven't really spent enough development, or like they just haven't shipped this yet? So that's why.
Yeah, I think they'll ship it eventually because it just makes sense. It's just lower cost, and you know, revenue is a big thing, so you might as well increase your revenue there using it. And but like, I think Michael did some calculation before blobs were a thing, where even if all L2s were to post, we would still be like at one third of blobs space The thing is, since then, L2 usage has increased like quite substantially, especially on like Linea and Base. So, you know, now they're taking up like quite a bit of blob space, which wasn't the case. But the thing is, we had space for like quite a bit of margin and probably more chains. You know, now we've got like L3s popping up. Well, maybe we'll have some of those posting into blobs. So, you know, the meta is launch your own L2 or L3, I guess.
Yep. And with that, I think that covers blobs very well. So in general, we've seen quite the uptick in L2 activity. We already kind of brushed over the topic briefly here. So maybe I hear, Toby, you've kind of explored Linea for a bit.
I honestly wasn't clued into it too much. I think all I did was mint an NFT a few weeks ago on Linea, but haven't used it all that much otherwise. And I was looking into like Grow the Pie and where the NFT activity is, mostly because I wanted to look into how Base is doing. And then I realized, like, what the hell? Like, Linea is having twice as many transactions lately, which is like absurdly high relative to all L2s. So it saw like 4.8 million transactions in a single day, like a few on the 31st of March, so which a few days ago. And I was wondering, so I just posted on Twitter, like, hey, does anyone know where this is coming from? And there was basically just one answer, which is that they currently have, so layer three, which if I share here, has a thing where you have like quests essentially, and people are farming those quests to death. And there's quite a few quests. So I tried running through it. For some reason, I'm not logged in here, so you can't see it, but like I did maybe a third of them. And even just a third has like, I would say a substantial amount of transactions, maybe like 30 or something. So there's maybe 100, at least 100 transactions just to complete the whole quest thing. So, you know, if you want to farm this thing, which is currently what people are doing, everyone is posting a lot of transactions, thus driving the activity way up. I also think that as we are recording this, layer three's like quest program should end and transition to a new one. So maybe it's worth looking back in a bit and see like what is going on. Has like activity died down or is it being sustained? In which case, that's awesome. But I haven't seen much signs of, you know, sustainable activity other than like NFT mints for weird NFTs I've never heard of, and other protocols that are starting to build something, but they don't look as full-fledged as you could see on other chains yet for now.
Yeah, I also played around with this yesterday, and you're really doing a lot of transactions. And this is an interesting kind of concept, the experience of like, hey, this is what you can do on the chain. But I there was some very questionable things in there, and the UX wasn't always perfect. The Linea UX was actually worked really well. So I didn't have any RPC issues or stuff like that. It's just like whoever developed those apps which are behind those links, like, yeah, some of them were a bit cumbersome.
Yeah.
But oh well. I think so much for Linea. Or anyone have more comments on Linea?
I got the frog, so I got the OG NFT for the chain. And so, yeah, I mean, overall, same. It's probably a lot of the, you know, this kind of early incentive farming, minting events going on. Yeah. But I mean, it's like, from consensus. So I'm kind of bullish. They will have, you know, a team, you know, building out the ecosystem, you know, it may be slow, but let's see. Yeah. And
I'm interested in what the, like, this is basically going to be the MetaMask chain. So I'm interested in how consensus uses MetaMask and Linea together, which is like, it's kind of like Coinbase has all the users because they're the exchange, and consensus has all the users because they are still the largest wallet, I would think. Mm-hmm. I mean, wallet numbers are hard to come by, but I would think if we look at MetaMask swap volume, it's probably still like way up there. So they have the user access or the point of sale, kind of like if you take this into 100%. Web 2 or like the customer relationship, if you take this into like the Web 2 terminology. So Linear really should, like, I don't know, like it's their advantage to lose, really. Like everyone else is kind of like they're building things starting it from zero, but Linear already has, like, theoretically with MetaMask in the back, they already have all those customer relations at the distribution. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of builders and applications they can actually attract to that chain. But with that said, actually, perfect segment to the Coinbase chain, which is Base. And Danning, I think you've looked into what's happening there currently. So maybe just walk us through that.
Yeah, so this chart I'm showing here is the base fee of most of the layer 2. And the most obvious one here you see is the blue one that's Base, and it's like spiking up to crazy level that's like, you know, other chains are nowhere near. It's around, at the peak was, the first peak was the smaller one around like 1 GUI for base fee and maybe around 2 for the second one. And then overall, the whole gas fee, including base fee and priority fee, was also just like the same trend of like there was a crazy spike. It's still really high compared to others, but it looks like it's kind of like cooling down a little bit. And so you wonder, so why L2 gas fee went up so high? And like, I got this query from actually you, Boxer, where if we look at this breakdown of all the function call that's happening on Base, the bigger segment of the bar is showing trading or execute, which is likely also, I guess, a trading kind of function. And then you also see approve as like the number 3 or 4 function call there. It's number 3, which is also for swap tokens. And then there's mint cubes. So I guess this is some sort of projects, maybe cube related, and it's like minting
cube,
it.
Cube is actually, that's layer 3. So there seems to be some kind of layer 3 thing going on Base as well.
I see. Yeah. And it seems like it stopped a few days ago. But then, yeah, you see friend.tech is also another one, and minting is another generic big one. So yeah, I think like it's mostly, I would say, like trading activity of actually the meme coin wave recently going to Base. One data that showed this clearly, I thought it was really insightful, is this one called DBridge, which is a bridge that I use mostly when I do Solana stuff. They have an analytics page where you can see they're accounting among all their own traffic. What are the movement of the money, you know, across different chain? And if you look at like the Solana one, which is the second biggest in terms of the alt traffic, you know, next to Ethereum, Solana money mostly going to Ethereum, and then the second one is Base, and then next would be Arbitron. And so you pretty much can see, I've hearing people saying this as well, like the meme coin is going to Base. There's the C launch Dune dashboard where you can see the Base DEX volume is going up crazy as well, like just like up to the right kind of chart. Went up to like 1.2 billion per day at peak and end of March. I think this number is almost like half of Ethereum, because I remember Ethereum DEX volume is around like 2 billion per day. Yeah, and then if you look at the breakdown, 80-90% are Uniswap, and it's like increasingly higher and higher during this like frenzy time. Because like most of the meme coin are just like launching on Uniswap, easily creating a pool, deploying their token there for liquidity. Another one that I was like looking at is Dolby's dashboard about atomic arbitrage. So pretty much, I think as far as I know, there isn't really any L2 MEV data. Dolby's data is actually the exclusive, you know, for sidechain MEV activity. Yeah, and it's showing the same. Yeah, it's showing the same thing here. You see, like DEX trading volume overall has going up crazy, and also if you break it down to how many of them are like atomic arbitrage, and you see this number is going up. The number of bots also going up. So I think we can pretty much draw a conclusion that like most of them are DEX trading activity, trading bots activity, and MEV activity. Although to caveat though is like when you're on this kind of L2, there's only like I think Base also only have one sequencer. I'm not sure.
Yep.
And then there's no mempool, native mempool. There isn't a way for a searcher to really like say, I can see clearly what are the user transactions and then do a sandwiching between it. Because I need to know exact how much token going to come out from the user and how much price they're going to move to really have a sandwiching kind of strategy. What the searcher can do with no information would be blank backrunning or like backrunning, end of last block's price. To be at the top of next block and say, like, I'm going to do the arbitrage between the pool where I see the price already not even. Or basically saying, I'm going to do a token mint sniping. I'm just like blindly sending this transaction, assuming it's going to launch in the next block and like keep doing it. So that's like easily like spamming the chain and like increasing the gas. And then you can also increase the revert rate of your transactions, but you don't care if it's like really cheap, right? So I looked at like multi-chain revert rate across transactions. Base at a certain time point, it was like 23% of revert rate. It spiked down now around maybe 6-7%, which is still really high. Like Ethereum is around 1% overall. Similar thing for Optimism, it's like 8-9% of revert rate. It's pretty crazy. But again, like to caveat, it's mostly probably bots rather than retail users suffering. Reverts.
I think that was when Optimism. So I was looking into like sandwich data, and when Optimism added EIP 1559, which was a bit later than Ethereum, you saw like a lot of like sandwich activity basically dying down to like zero level, like level of zero. And my guess is that people were like spamming like crazy beforehand, and hoping to, you know, they're like, oh, what are currently the things being currently traded most, and based on this, you know, guess like have a transaction with high amount of gas and one with low, and try to sandwich by just doing like guesswork, which was, you know, when it was extremely cheap to do so, it was an ARP that worked. But now with EIP 1559 and more activity on DL2, it's just not as good of a, you know, like it's not as profitable of a strategy. So it basically isn't happening much anymore. And with single sequences, of course, it's not really, you know, no mempool means it's really, really hard to see what is going on. I don't think there's an L2 with a mempool at this point, but it would be really cool to see in all the market. The only two with like high sandwich activity are going to be like Ethereum and BNB. There's some other L1s, but in terms of L2s, there's not that much for now.
Wait, you say mempool on BNB?
It's a good question. I know there's a lot of, there's some sandwich activity. I'm not sure if there's a mempool. I'm not sure. Because there's like last I checked, there's like only a select few amount of people who are running BNB. So it's not just one sequencer. It's a few, but this, it's a limited amount.
Yeah, it's CZ in 19 different costumes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the rumor.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a good question, actually. I have no idea.
Googled it. Looks like yes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Seems like there's a mempool data service for Binance. Yeah.
Okay, so there has to be something, I guess.
Yeah, as soon as there's even two validators, they have to,
yep,
like, because you can't just submit them somewhere. You have to submit them into some reservoir where then the validator picks what they actually include. Okay, interesting. So all of this to say, is MEV on Base or is there not MEV on Base? I'm still left in the dark.
Yeah. I think the conclusion is that sandwiching or any strategy that needs a lot of like certain information would be hard, but there is definitely a maybe of like token mint sniping and also like arbitraging, as Dobby's dashboard shows. So yeah, and guess who is making money again? Trading bots. So like Banana Gun's dashboards here is showing actually, if you can, so they, it seems like they're on Base now. You can see basically it launched like maybe just a few weeks ago, it was like very little volume for the first few days, but quickly you surpass Solana now. Like for some days, like for example, this day it was like 18 million on base volume for Banana Gum trading bots and 9 million on Solana. You kind of could also see the shift of like Solana dying down a little bit, base goes higher. And then like, yeah, they're printing pretty much like 500,000. So 500,000 a day with three chains combined. And it's simple. It's just 1% transaction fee.
Okay. Yeah. And do they redistribute this to like Banana Stakers or something? Like how does that work? They have a token, right?
Banana Gum?
They don't have
a token?
Right.
Yeah, they do. They've got
that's
Banana.
A good... yeah.
So there must be some kind of like revenue share going on or something. I would assume.
Yeah.
Is it not on this dashboard? Whale Hunter is usually good at figuring these things out. There it is. Annualized PE. So they are paying out to their stakers.
Wait, APY is like 150. Damn.
Yeah.
Okay, I see. So we can basically participate by staking Banana to take share of their revenue then.
Wow.
Got it.
A 1.16 PE ratio. Do you know how crazy that is for tech? I mean, it's technically a tech startup. Like, this is okay. I guess Thea Research is going to soon buy, they're already in this segment. So I don't know. But this is very interesting. All right. So all of that. So general base activity. In your words, Denning, are you saying it's kind of driven, like there's real users?
Yeah, I think overall there are users who are mostly degen, who are basically like going there to trade meme coins, and that drive massively all those like trading bots volume actually. And with the user transactions coming in, there is also MEV bots transactions come in, basically like doing arbitraging across the pool because there's price movement. It's organic, but it's like financial nihilism kind of activity, you know? It's like...
you just wanted to say that word, huh? So basically, what you're saying is there's real users coming in, partly driven by probably Degen, like the Farcaster connection and everything, and they're just doing meme coin trading. And then that meme coin trading activity, in turn, pulls in a bunch of bots. So the transactions per day is kind of like, the more there are, the more like there's demand for them, kind of. It's almost like it's like a self.
Yeah.
It's a whole
ecosystem.
Prophecy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Self-reinforcing effect where like if you have more transactions, then there's more arbitrages to be had. If there's no arbitrages to be had, or like if there's more activity, it probably pulls in more users. Okay. Very interesting.
To say degen in a generic degen way, but now that you mentioned degen token, it was actually the token that was like going up the most. It's pretty crazy. Like, I met up some SF guy. One of the guys, I think he has like 500 million degen. Like this person, Joe, he's also like pretty big on Farcaster, and he was just like posting very actively and everything. I think what he told me was like, you know, initially he was like trying to speculate the whatever token from Warpcast, what was it, Warp? But then, you know, the Farcaster team is like very anti-speculative. So like that token is like no curve at all. Like it's gonna be whatever the price is. And he was like, okay, now there's this new degen thing. I'm gonna try that. And the first airdrop was to incentivize any activity or engagement of your cast. And so he was like, I'm giving out these warps to all the people react or like or reply to this thread. And so he farmed a shit ton of like engagement with that. And he got like shit ton of airdrop. And well, guess what? Like there was a VC also invested in Degen. One confirmation, they bought like $1 million value of Degen in February. And now it's 100x, like it's $100 million dollar in terms of the price. And so I guess, you know, the farming now is bringing Joe to a $500 million. I mean, he said if Degen is going to be $1, he will be having $500 million. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. And yeah. Also, like, imagine performance of one confirmation, right? How, like, what's the usual ROI for a VC?
It's one of their like it's one of the VC bets actually working out, right? Like their whole game is like we are gonna make a million investments and one of them is gonna hit, and this one certainly has hit. I met Richard 3 days after this was like publicly announced, and I kind of like in a poking manner, kind of like what is this about? Because I frankly didn't understand. I think the lesson is always just follow Richard. Like whatever Richard is doing, like you should definitely pay attention to. Yeah. And if they like investing a million, just put 1,000 in there. It's probably a good idea, but obviously not financial advice.
The only thing is that like for like VC, I'm guessing it's the token is vested, is unvested for now.
I think they just bought it. Yeah, they just bought it on the open market. It's just an on-chain transaction. One confirmation.eth like address.
Oh wow! Then okay, yeah. Then that's really impressive.
Because I don't know if they did any like contract of they're gonna lock up or anything. Because I think it might have been like an OTC transaction, but it was just on chain.
Yeah,
there is a vesting schedule based on what I see like from this post from Nansen. So they purchased it in February, vesting starting at I guess instant, right? It was like February this year and.
Yep.
But there is a vesting cliff. So meaning like it's vesting, but you're not getting it until you can't sell it until this time.
There's a 6 month cliff.
Yeah, 6 months. Yeah. And so total of 2 years vesting ends in 2 years.
So what I mean is like as I mean, I think DGEN is cool and I hope it sticks around, but it's still short term to say like if it's a definite win for it's looking good though for one confirmation. Haseeb recently tweeted like you guys who like all VCs who invest in meme coins, like what are you guys telling your LPs? Like what, like because you got reports to your LPs where you're invested in, and I didn't really get any conclusive answers in the replies. I didn't see much, and I don't think there's much you can justify. The problem is like for like venture, meme coins are very short term in like 99.9% of cases. DGEN seems to be like an outlier more than anything. There's very, very few are like still traded on the long term. So
because they have a roadmap, you know, they're actually building things, and I think it's quite bullish. That I mean, my first impression was the same. I didn't even try to engage about DGEN when I saw it like early on in Farcast. I thought it's another like airdrop or that like farming thing. I don't have time for that. But then it turns out, I mean, it's actually, it has utility where you can tip people on Farcast with DGEN, and they have this partnership with Dracula, which is the crypto TikTok, I guess. And they also use DGEN as a tip token as well, I guess. Yeah. And now they are also launching L3. So layer 3 last week launched, which I think is using, they were using Arbitron, Orbit, and Base for settlement, and AnyTrust for DA. So, they're building a chain, and so now DGEN token is becoming a native gas token there. So, it seems like it's going legit. I don't know.
utility is a bit like, I don't know. That's a big word to use. I think basically what has happened is like Farcast has become the unofficial or like the unofficial official token of Warpcast or like Farcast in general. And it's kind of like the community token of that ecosystem where like I think it's like the critical mass of like that social network and that social graph is putting their power behind DGEN. And DGEN just is the vessel for like making this happen. And like for sure, like the Jacek, the founder of DGEN has actually built something useful. Like it's really cool that they're doing all of these integrations and like the user experience is nice. And like I bridged to DGEN yesterday and like I had some problems like connecting my Ola Connect, but like in the end it worked. So it's like they're actually like building the infrastructure, but like I think it's much more about the social network and like it's not about the like utility itself that much, but rather it's like they're casting a vibe into reality. And like it's kind of a meme token in that sense, but like I would almost more say it's like a community token. Where like this community of people of like it's kind of in the ETH, like I don't want to say maxi, in the like ETH OG like camp, that token. It's like the community slash meme token of that like whole guard. So I don't know. It's very interesting. I wouldn't call it like a classic meme token. I think it's a bit like doesn't really fit the bill.
It did the transition from meme coin to actual more than that than just that really well. But it's also, you know, why when you look at the D-Bridge volume, people are coming from Solana because they're meme coin traders. That's what a lot of Solana activity is currently. And that moving on to Base because it became the meme coin L2 for now. And with VGen being like at the lead of it, but there's other meme coins. I'm not as glued into all of them, but there's quite a few popping up. And if you look on like, I forgot, Dex Screener, you can see that like on the top few, it's 80% Solana and maybe 20% is going to be Base tokens. So I guess that's a good proxy for where like the activity is at currently, in terms of meme coins at least. But yeah, meme coins otherwise, you know, they're either short term or you do something with it, and that's what like Jacek did with DGen, which is interesting. It's also it's probably the first L3 that I know of at least that has hit like somewhat mainstream. And that's like an interesting new development.
Yeah, maybe we can quickly.
What is L3?
What is an L3? I actually prepared something on this. So L3 is just another layer on top of an L2. So you can kind of imagine Base is an L2 built on top of Ethereum mainnet. And then now Jacek or the DGen team has built an L3 using like a roll-up as a service provider. So first of all, they've built an L3. So that L3 settles on Base and uses Arbitrum, any trust as data availability solution. So the transactions are kind of like they're settled on Base, but then the data availability layer is something like they haven't used Celestia or Near or like they could even like I guess post this into like Blobs or something, but instead they have actually chosen this Arbitrum thing. So very interesting there, I think the rationale behind this is basically okay, we are paying too much transaction fees, even though Base's transaction fees have really reduced. Now with an L3, it's basically free. But I think like again, like you're sacrificing one more layer of neutrality, kind of. Where it's like this is just a centralized database at this point. Like, of course, there's DA and like we're settling the transactions and everything, but it's not really like, can you really say that this is secured by Ethereum? I mean, both like the funny thing here is both Base and AnyTrust post their data onto Ethereum, but there's like a layer of abstraction between that. So it's like, it's a bit fishy. Philosophically, like I don't really have a problem with this. Like it's like, am I gonna store like $1 million on Base? Like does or like on the DGen chain? Does it have to be censorship resistant? It's like kind of also I don't know. And I even think like those properties you could still kind of ascribe to that. But at the same I think there's some trade-offs that must have been made. that's kind of what I can say on that. Then maybe on the kind of grander scheme here. So we have also, so DGen is the first one that is actually successful. And Syndicate is a roll-up as a service provider. They've actually tweeted yesterday that they have 770,000 active addresses on there, 25,000 deployed contracts, $60 million bridged. And that $60 million bridge is mostly in the native, or like it's only in the native token DGen. Now there's kind of like there's a DEX that has, or like multiple DEXs that have popped up there. Of course, it's called DGen Swap or like whatever. So it's like as every chain needs to have its theme, and the theme on DGen is everything is purple. So if you scroll through DEX screener, just every shitcoin on there is purple. Very impressive, and this is pretty much the first L3 that we've seen that has actually hit any like notion of traction. There has been like the attempt of BNB. I think we talked about it earlier, OPBNB. So optimism, or like, is that even an L3? It's not an L3, actually. Yeah, it's an L2 on top of BNB, right? Yeah. So yeah, I actually don't know of any, like maybe there's some game L3s that we don't really know about. But this is like the first L3 that I see like actually having success. And it is because they already have a community. So like they're not kind of building their L3 first and then they hope to like find the community, but rather it's the other way around, where it's like they have an established use case. They haven't, and now they're just spinning up the app chain. I think, I guess you could also sort it into the app chain category. And like of those, we've seen quite a few. It's like Evo or DYDX. Yeah. Or is there anywhere? I think those are the two that I know are like successful examples.
There's a few, but like it's those, like DGEN seems more agnostic to one specific, like it's more general purpose meme coins, I guess. Yeah. Or yeah. I don't know what.
Yeah, the other ones are basically like they're being administrated by.
Yeah.
Only the Evo people or only the DYDX people have admin access to that chain. You can't really say it like that, but I think that's going to make sense to most of our listeners if you look at it from a software development or even database management perspective or something like that. Can you deploy contracts on Evo? Can I deploy contracts on Evo? Probably not.
I don't think so.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. With we'll check after the podcast and tell you guys in the show notes. what were you saying?
No, I think Danning said Zora in the chat. I think Zora is like vertical specific, so it's going to be mostly on NFTs, but it's still permissionless. And I think Uniswap recently deployed on Zora, although it's not really an ERC20 chain, but.
It's a general purpose EVM.
Yeah, yeah.
So people have kind of seen like the EVM madness, and they've recognized like, hey, we can do the same, the DGEN EVM madness, where like anyone is just deploying like a DEX or like a ERC20 token, and people are just doing the same thing on Zora because again, the distribution has already happened. So it's like there's users on these chains who you can conventionally like who you can maybe convert to use your, I don't know, Zora swap, buy your meme coin. So I think that's what basically happening here.
I think the reason Uniswap deployed was driven by, so you know how you can tip DGEN on Farcaster? There's a similar token now on Zora where, you know, in the Zora UX, you can comment on mints, and I forgot the name of the token, but you can do the exact same and tip in the comments of Zora mints.
I forgot
the name. It's like a blue orb and whatever, but they have their own token, and they essentially, I don't think it was done by the Zora team. I think it's also just like DGEN, like done externally by someone else. But it's seeing the same interesting development as DGEN did on Base and Farcaster, I guess.
Okay. Very cool. So maybe to quickly finish this L3, thing. So there's now, so Syndicate is kind of managing the DGEN chain for the DGEN team, and Syndicate is a roll-up as a service provider. And ETH Denver was full of roll-up as a service provider. So this is definitely going to be a trend in the cycle where as soon as something gets big enough, if Frentech were to launch now and have the same success, they would probably immediately launch an app chain as well. Maybe if they had their own token already. I don't know. Role service providers is definitely going to be a theme in this cycle. Much to the dismay of data analysts, because every time there's a new chain, all the data providers need to first index that chain, and then only then we can look into it. So we can't really be of useful service here with like providing deep insights into DGEN, because the chain is not on Flipside, the chain is not on Dune, the chain is not on Allium. We can't do anything yet. We'll probably, I don't know. There's probably going to be solutions for this problem going forward, hopefully.
And just to get back up, the So the token is called Enjoy, if anyone was wondering. But yeah, I don't think it's seeing as remotely as much activity on as like DGEN, but it is interesting, and I haven't looked into activity actually, but it is the dominant way, just like DGEN was on, I mean, it is on Farcaster for Zora comments, which I learned was a thing because of this.
Yeah. All right. So we've really gone down the rabbit hole here of meme coins and base and DGEN and Farcaster. So to go back up to the base level of why is there so much activity on base, I think there's also some institutions, and I think Coinbase is now starting to like store their USDC. So Dobby, if you can tell us more about that, that would be great.
So I was looking into TVL a while back, and L2Beat has this interesting breakdown where if you look here, this is TVL, but you can see native assets and canonically bridged assets. So canonically bridged is going to be, you know, stuff that's bridged from on the chain. That's usual stuff. And there's native minted, and those are going to be, so I'm going to, maybe it's there somewhere. View TVL breakdown, that's the one. And here you can see that the dominant one are, so DGEN, TYBG, which is another meme coin, Aero, which is a DEX on base, and then you've got USDC, and there's a significant amount of USDC, so 1.3 billion on base right now. So I got me curious. I think I tweeted about it. I didn't get much answer. Then we were like, with Michael, I was trying to see like what is this, where is this coming from, and why is this there, and just a bit later, we had an announcement that from Coinbase that they're starting to move their corporate and customer USDC balance on base because it means it's easier to manage and settle faster, which is an interesting development. And you know, we'll see if that keeps going. At the time of the announcement, it was at 600 million. That was mostly, you know, 400 million came in 2 weeks, and since then, that was like 2 weeks ago, there's like double the amount on base now. So 1.3 billion, which is a substantial amount. And especially like if you look at the TVL in terms of percentage, 1.3 is like more than a third of the entire TVL. So it's quite high of an amount. I don't know if it's all just base, all just like Coinbase moving their assets, or there's also retail. I'm guessing it's a bit of both, with the majority coming from Coinbase. But worth taking a look and monitoring in the future and seeing like if that keeps rising. But yeah, it's kind of cool to see them move their assets on chain. And I don't know if they're settling them on Ethereum or keeping them all in one wallet and like keeping the ledger off chain entirely. I don't know to what degree they were moving stuff on chain, but you know, if that means we get like more of the things, more granular, I guess, movements on chain, that's kind of a cool like development.
It's kind of interesting how USDT is the biggest stablecoin, but everything that I touch or like all the chains that I'm interested in are USDC stablecoin chains.
Yeah, I think USDT is very prominent on Tron, and I don't think there's USDC on Tron. And Tron is used by exchanges to settle the transaction and move them from one another. That's my understanding. I'm currently actually diving deep into stablecoins, so hopefully I'll have some dashboard on that soon. But the reason I'm doing it now is because Dune just listed Tron as a chain, which I don't know much about and I'm trying to understand, and it's also extremely necessary for the full picture of stablecoins.
Yep.
One thing recently I noticed was like if you check the DEX trading volume on Ethereum, USDT to WETH pair is higher than USDC, at least that day when I was looking at it. Because like, you know, people always, you know, doing research using the USDC and WETH pair as the sample because it's the biggest by TVL or trading volume in the past. But I think right now USDT is kind of like doing this taking over in terms of volume. I would be curious to see if that's a stable trend from your stablecoin. Yes, stable trend from the stablecoin dashboard.
See. We'll see how far along I managed. Like, I have some. I often have like plans for dashboards that I don't fulfill because there's just too much going on and it's just too high of a maintenance going forward. But I'm guessing this one should mostly be about labeling addresses and like future proofing. And I just need to make sure also it supports like Solana and Tron. So yeah, if hopefully I have it at some point and I can share it with you guys.
Yeah. And one thing I recently just learned, which is like so obvious, is like, do you know what's the business model for the stablecoins? Like, how do they make money? They literally just put their money in bank, take the interest from bank. When right now the interest is 5% plus in US, and like, I was like, oh shit, yeah, it's such an easy business, you know, like just don't do all this algorithmic and stuff and just put money there and earn yields, you know. It's kind of genius.
Yeah, this for the like fully collateralized one, so USDC, USDT, I think that's the strat. And then there's different one. Maker is also, I think, one of the biggest, the protocol with one of the biggest like revenue currently that is like decentralized. And there's also, well, it's not really a stable coin. It's a synthetic dollar, but you know, whatever. I don't really know how to qualify it. Ethena's USD. USDE is another one that, full disclosure, like we are invested in, but it's another thing, which is the trading on shorting Ethereum and then also having some LSTs so that there's yield on both sides as long as the funding rates are positive. Which has historically been the case in extreme majority of days. So yeah, there's different approaches, and maybe there's space for still more. I think obviously the easiest one is like fully collateralized, because that's like a historically easy thing that there's a lot of data on.
Yep, we'll see how USDT does. So Danik's actually right. USDT is the most dominant token in DeFi at the moment, or like it's being traded more than USDC at least. So yeah, very interesting, like very confusing to me. All I see is USDC.
Where did you check?
Henry Stats has he released a dashboard this week on Dexus.
Oh,
and nice. It's one of the. Yeah, it's the second most token being bought and sold. So on both places, WETH is one and USDT is two. So there's a lot of trading activity happening on chain with USDT, and not only on Tron, but rather on DVM chains that we all know. I would guess it's mostly ETH. Haven't looked into it that deep. But anyways, I think we have a few more kind of rapid fire topics. So Dobby, take it away for the first one.
Yes, boss, on it. Something that I've been looking into for a while closely is staking. I don't think we've mentioned it on the podcast, but historically, liquid staking tokens have taken most of the market share in terms of where like who controls and who stakes the ETH. So let me scroll to on this dashboard, and here you can see that there's like 30% of liquid staking, 30% of staked ETH is behind liquid staking protocols in early 2024, so at the start of it. And then we saw another primitive, which is Eigenlayer and liquid restaking and protocols starting to actually stake the ETH themselves, because that is mostly because of the Eigenlayer caps. So liquid staking tokens are capped. You can't infinitely have them on Eigenlayer, but you can spin up Eigenpools and stake it yourself. And therefore, liquid restaking protocols started to take in ETH themselves and stake it on behalf of users, and thus earning them higher yield. And since the beginning of the year, we've started to see that some of the staking share has moved from liquid staking to liquid restaking, which has taken a significant amount of a significant share, now over 3%, although it was like below 1% at the start of the year. And liquid staking has like gone down 3 or 4% since as well. So some of it has been moving, you know, from one place to another, but there's also probably, well, there's definitely also some that came in from other places. And that's like historically, you know, very, very different to what we know. Lido has usually been always the biggest in terms of inflow. Now it's the biggest in terms of the highest outflow, whereas Renzo and Etherfi have the highest inflows. Yeah, I thought that was an interesting development. So I expect things to keep going that way, at least until we see some eigenlayer airdrop happen, which I'm guessing at some point does. I'm not sure. That's also, you know,
It's gonna be a while.
Yeah. But
they're not far in their development. Like the last I heard, is like their development is not like their timelines are not like, oh, we're gonna release this in 3 months. Their timeline is we're gonna release this like in a year.
Yeah, I have no clue on the timeline at all. But I'm just saying, like, I think people are also speculating on that airdrop, which also drives this this move even further. Anyways, we'll see how it goes over the next few weeks and see if that keeps being the case. I want to move on to another.
I have a theory about this. Like, when you look at this chart, you can't really just say, oh, the Lido money is flowing out and it goes into EtherFi. EtherFi is a newer project than Lido, and they are, maybe it's just like they're a different phase of the growth. Like Lido was very early adopted by and absorbed a lot of TVL. And now with the market warming up, and I think there is a overall like a macro kind of theory that when the market is more bullish or like more, you know, warm, and people will withdraw their money from staking and to do things, you know, here and there doing yields. And so maybe that's why Lido is showing a withdrawal trend and EtherFi is showing a inflow because they're just starting with all the incentive and yield stuff. And I paste the link there if you would share it on your screen, that there was like there is a breakdown of total rewards across Ethereum, you know, across the execution layer and consensus layer. So if you hover on the rewards distribution bar, you could see that the consensus layer rewards, which I guess is from like attestation and staking, is like 74%, and priority fee and MEV are coming from execution layer. So it's like the priority fee user paid and also the Coinbase transfer builder or whatever searcher transfer to the proposer on the execution layer. It's like less than 30%. That number was 7-3 last year, like a year ago when we checked. So it means like the consensus layer rewards percentage has been going up. So last year was still bear market. And I think I actually was like Tom and another person, Mike Neuter, they were saying like, you know, when the market warming up, this the number going to shift towards a higher rewards on consensus layer, because like, I guess less staking, it means higher rewards, you know, like less amount of staking. So I think just combining this number, you could maybe see, you know, the Lido outflow may not just be, you know, people are moving to other pools. So
yeah, it's I don't know if it's a flow from one to the other. I'm guessing there's some of it because there's just higher yield on one of them. So, you know, if you've got your staked ETH that's liquid, it makes sense. Also, you know, one already has a token, the other, I think EtherFi now does, but it only just recently does. And Eigenlayer is also, you know, rumored to eventually launch a token. I'm not sure if Renzo has a token, but, you know, all these things is just you get more reward. There's just higher incentives on liquid restaking protocols right now. And maybe not driving everything, but I think it is a small driver for the transition at least.
Although EigenLayer will not say drive the money out from Lido, right? Because it's like you stake in Lido first and then you stake in EigenLayer. So that's the restake.
So the reason this is also flowing, I think, to LRTs is because the LSTs are capped in terms of how much can be placed into EigenLayer. So they regularly increase the cap. But the ETH itself, through eigenpools, is not capped. So in order to gain more stakes, and in order to keep activity going, LRTs need to stake it themselves. And this is why people are, putting ETH rather than liquid stake LSTs into liquid restaking protocols.
Oh, is it actually solo validators?
Well, they. So the chart I was showing is exclusively ETH. So it doesn't look at LSTs or LTs. So
So they accept Coinbase ETH, I think, CB ETH or however it's called.
Yeah.
They accept Rocket Pool ETH. They accept Lido ETH.
Yeah.
But then they also accept solo validator ETH. You have to stake it yourself, or you have to find kind of service provider.
They stake it for you.
Ah,
through eigenpools. That's
okay.
So they run a pool that is doing restaking themselves. That's they handle all this for you. And since every time it takes like a day or two for LSTs to reach the cap, and therefore no one can stake through those anymore. People are like keep on staking through ETH, the native asset.
Yeah,
and
very smart growth strategy.
That makes the restaking pool a staking pool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. What I track on the dashboard is exclusively like the native assets. I have no idea how much ETHify has in LSTs, and I think from what I heard, they also converted all the LSTs they had into ETH itself to stake it all themselves and have it under their control. But I'm not 100% sure, but all I know is this is only tracking like the native asset.
Okay. That was a long rapid fire session.
That was a slow fire.
But fair enough. There was some things to be clarified here. On the next topic, us all as on-chain analysts, Hayden Adams from Uniswap tweeted out. So Hayden just hit us out of the blue with, is it worth removing events and moving to call traces for Uniswap V4 for 1% gas savings on all swaps? And obviously, us analysts, or I'm speaking for myself, I say no, because events are beautiful and makes it way easier to actually analyze those events. But maybe does anyone have a contrarian perspective here?
Yeah, I also clicked no, so you can see the check mark. It's also because it's the right answer. But this has been a discussion for a while. I think you also have like protocols popping up that intend on letting people have a modified client, so you can actually run like a forked version of Ethereum and follow the chain, but have events that aren't there being emitted on your chain, on your on your pipeline, which is interesting. But I don't think I don't like moving everything to that. I would rather have all events on chain. If you look, there's a good example. So Ambient is basically everything Uniswap V4 has, as far as I know, and events aren't there. And what it's resulted in is I have no idea where to find Ambient data, and there's no way I'm gonna go out of my way and abstract that data, because looking through all traces and seeing like, okay, which token is this for? Is this just a swap, or is it like some kind of you got tokens that give a percentage of every swap to some other contract? There's a lot of things going on. It's just a ton easier if there's events for everyone involved. And that includes analysts, but also devs that run any kind of Apple protocol that need this data readily available for them to digest into their own pipeline.
Yeah, it seems to be the data standard that we've all kind of settled on. And a lot of like applications are built on the premise that there's going to be events to index. And if you suddenly say like, we're not going to do events, you're just going to cause a lot, like you're going to cause so much work throughout the entire industry. It's going to be insane.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
Also like, it's a weird thing where I think the focus should be on reducing fees rather than saying, hey, let's remove 1% of those. 1% is like negligible for, I think, almost everyone every user at least. The protocols themselves on the one paying, they're like they can spin it up as like we're paying this and it's expensive, but the reality is the user is paying. And I don't know if the guy who's paying a high amount of gas is also like paying it for this. You know, I don't think he cares all that much about this 1%.
What do you mean by fees? I think that's like a bit confusing terminology.
So, you know, the gas savings. If you remove the events, you would have around 1% of savings in terms of gas that the end user is paying. That's what I mean by fees.
I mean, even though you say, okay, it's user paying the gas fee, and so maybe developer don't care that much, I think developer want to build things that user will adopt. So there's still incentive developer there. Although I think my opinion on all this topic was that I was like strongly against it. I'm just like, on-chain data maxi as like, first of all, if you remove swap token event, a swap event, then the call data doesn't really tell you how much in the end they get. It only tells you like what they intended to execute. And that's not going to be the actual token you're receiving because of the, you know, slippage and trade collision. Like swap event was the actual only truth. Maybe you can argue then you can maybe join a token transfer event to find actual the token received amount. But then that will be like a lot more complicated to join correctly and everything. So yeah, I thought that was like really bad kind of movement. But then there were people who were, you know, talking about this project called Shadow.xyz, which is a data project. They proposed this pretty bold idea of like, you can like dev, you can remove all the events and you can just like do a customized events locally towards a shadow network. And so basically not posting the events on chain on Ethereum, but we can run another like, you know, network of, you know, people can run nodes and then anyone can query from a shadow node and you can add like shit ton of like details into events, which actually could maybe make the data work easier. But again, there will be a composability issue, you know, like only when the shadow data is like really easy to consume and everything, it might be, you know, really a good thing. But I also think like there is a layer of, you know, credibility or like security guarantee that's removed once you are moving off from Ethereum mainnet. So yeah, I think it makes sense for them to try to like remove things to save gas overall, but it will just be a headache for data people. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Is there maybe a world where they remove it on mainnet and just leave it alive on all like layer twos that they deploy to? Because on the layer two, I really don't care about this 1%. But if I pay 100, I mean, even on mainnet, like what are you going to like, if you pay $100 for a swap, are you really going to care that it's $99 instead?
Yeah, exactly. It's like I don't think the end user cares all that. Like if he's ready to pay 100, he's fine with 1% change.
Yeah.
Regardless of how much he's paying, like 1% is just negligible anyways. And
this sounds like an engineer trying to over-optimize problems that don't exist.
Exactly. Like moving to L2s and reducing gas there just is much, I think, a much better like way forward.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll see if Hayden will send him this segment. That's like, as the data analyst experts here. But yeah, I think Dobby, you wanted to show something that Andrew built. So maybe let's switch over there.
Yeah, I have one last thing, which is like one of my most frequent questions I get is I analyze stuff on Dune, and I think it's not necessarily easy to go from someone who's never really touched on-chain data to being familiar and understanding how it all goes. And Andrew has been kind of like the teacher of all things. He's headmaster at Dune Analytics, as you can see on the right. And I think it's a good title because it actually represents like he releases articles very frequently on how he analyzed something new. So he's done stuff on Bitcoin, he's done stuff on Solana, of course on EVMs as well. But I find his resources super helpful. So here in this tweet, he shows a small demo and you can actually check it out on here. And here you can see, so for the audio listeners, it looks like a tree that you can click through, and every branch has topics that you can go and dive into. So that can be topics very broad for understanding how on-chain data works, but also much more specific. So how do you want to look into tokens specifically, bridges, rollups? And he's done quite a few articles where he explains his process and how he goes about his analysis. Yeah, I think this is a really, really good job for if you ever want to jump into on-chain data. I really recommend you check this out.
Yeah, I can only agree to that, Andrews. It's his work output is insane. He's the most productive person that I know. With that, Danny, you've prepared a section on April Fool's Cribes of the Week, or however we want to call this section. There was some very stupid April Fool's jokes, and we haven't heard anyone else talk about them. So we thought we might just give it a shot.
Yeah, I just thought it's kind of hilarious. Like, initially, the thing caught my eyes was like, David Hoffman from Backlist was saying he's joining Solana. I thought it's real for a second, but then I was seeing an article saying, oh, plus the bag is very juicy. And I was like, okay, this is for sure a joke. And then there was like a bunch of fire there caused and then merged from Solana ecosystem, I guess. Like he kind of trolled against that. But yeah, they were like, you know, doing the kind of like reverse trolling on this. And so there's this thread put together by Cointelegraph, and there is this new bunkered coin announced by Tolly from Solana, saying they're gonna transmit through shortwave radio channels. So that was quite innovative.
It's a good primitive.
Vitalik joined as well, as like introduced the degen communism as the only correct ideology for crypto. And then there was like, this one is a ridiculous one, was like, there is a pseudonymous account claimed that Juice Box was raised by Paradigm for $69 billion and the price went up crazy. This is a straight scam.
This is like pump and dump. That is hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And they can excuse
wait,
them from,
who,
oh, sorry, that was
a pseudonymous account claimed that. Do we know anything more about this? Like, is it just literally some random guy on Twitter is like, oh, Juicebox,
I think so,
raised by Paradigm, and then some, okay, that's very interesting.
So I thought it was just like ridiculous. Things were finishing this episode, I prepared also an Easter egg for you guys. So recently there is a, a music AI called Suno.ai. I don't know if you guys seen it. Storm from Paradigm, he's also a data guy, but he also loves Rust. He showed me first his song, which is Rewrite in Rust. And like the lyrics is hilarious. It's just like, oh, we want to rewrite everything from Python to Rust, et cetera. And it's like, it shows, you know, represents perfectly the fanatic personality of all the Rust Tashians. So I tried the Suno one for our podcast. And so I wrote a song called Wizard Anthem in like 5 minutes. It was the AI generated lyrics and AI generated tone. So maybe this can be our future theme music. Like I got feedback from audience that like we need an intro and an outro music. So you want to give it a listen?
Let's go.
So I'm going to play the music now. Okay, yeah. Let's go. Good.
We met online in the data community. Three friends with a love for crypto and unity. Hill Dobby, the house elf, casting spells with magic. He likes to trace BlackRock wallets with heuristics. Boxer, the horse with crypto story to narrate. Keep transit drama from timeline up. Hey, and Dan ain't the pink cool. for being me on diaper. She talks about MEVRA. Crypto day wizards, join us for the parade. ETF does a lot of Bitcoin trade. Covering public secrets in the blockchain chain. Bachelor, cherry picking liar. We call them out and set you on fire. Index podcast, crypto data empire.
How's that?
That's impressive. Like AI wise, that's like really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I tuned the lyrics slightly afterwards, like to make it more content wise relevant. But
yeah, if we ever record a live episode, we have to rap this live, you know.
Yeah, we gotta do the chorus live.
That would be hilarious. All right, I think that is it for this week. I learned a lot. I hope you, our listeners, learned a lot. And we will be back in 2 weeks with another episode. I don't know if we are going to have a guest or not, but we will see and you will find out. As always, feedback is appreciated. Any last words, Danning, Hildobi?
No, this was great.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Index Podcast. Bye-bye. Crypto day wizards, join us.